What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, June 20, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hello there, I am Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 881 of the Biden-Harris administration, 504 days until the 24th presidential election. Vacation just around the corner. You can find me on Instagram, the Bob Seska, Twitter, Bob Seska underscore go, Spoutable Bob Seska, Blue Sky Bob Seska, I think TikTok Bob Seska too. I think you get the naming scheme. Also, the Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. Back from vacation, Buzz Burbank with the news.
Yeah. You say Buzz Burbank.
37.
You've said it all.
Welcome. Hey,
only 37? Just 37? I was expecting 3,700 charges. Hi.
So yeah. Great to have you back.
It's great to be back, and I'm looking forward to vacation. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Hi, everybody. Yeah. It was a great vacation. Again, the introduction since I've been away. He's Bob. Mm-hmm. I'm Buzz. Or, as Fox News calls us, wannabe dictators.
Fire that guy.
They did. Yeah. Wow, things were crazy while I was gone, weren't they?
Yes.
I understand several prominent Republicans were injured when they fell off the Trump bandwagon. So
that's
we wish them well.
Very true.
Trump's getting desperate himself. Mm-hmm. He's promised that if elected, he'll give Americans a whole year of festivals and celebrations. But if he goes to jail, it'll still be a year of festivals and celebrations.
Yeah!
See how that works? There's a debate underway here in Florida now. Seriously. Uh-huh. Whether to pronounce the first syllable of the governor's name as D or De. D or De.
Mm-hmm.
Actual newspaper headline here. Is it D or De?
Oh, God.
It's De.
Mm-hmm.
De. Ron De-fascist. That's the correct pronunciation.
Sure.
Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, as you know, probably are offering a pile of money to get a doctor to debate anti-vaxxer RFK Jr.
Mm-hmm.
They should be paying the doctor to treat the three of them. Right?
100% true, yes.
The Saudi government is facing multiple investigations now for its attempted takeover of pro-golf.
Yeah.
But bad news, the Saudis don't plan to stop there. Now they're going after pickleball.
We used to play that in high school, and now it's a big deal. It's crazy how things come back.
Don't touch our pickleballs. and finally, Republicans say their star witness accusing Joe Biden of taking a bribe has died. Apparently, he was electrocuted while rewiring Hunter Biden's laptop.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
All right, kicking off a brand new week with Rocky Mountain Mike. Listen to this. Yeah.
We caught him that Trump. He can't back out. Because we love our country, baby. Why can't they see? He's crooked and shady. And we don't believe a word he says. We can't go on together with seditious crimes.
Seditious.
precious grass. Caught in the trunk.
Rocky Mountain Mike.
Wow. Thank you to Rocky Mountain Mike for filling in for me last week. Great job. I'm sorry that you didn't do a monologue because you're very funny and I enjoy your jokes very much. And you did get off some good ones during the show. So
that's true.
Congratulations on that. But what Rocky Mountain Mike really did last week was bring a great new song. It's based on James Taylor's Shower of the People. And I'm still not clear on the title, but it's about the documents in the shower at Mar-a-Lago. And it's just incredible. And you should consider playing it again, Bob, because at some point, because that was truly, truly great. And again, thanks to Mike for filling in.
Well, how about this?
More fun, yeah? More music, the Bob Seska Show.
Let's do another one.
Play your games and you can try to outsmart
double play.
All the threats who are coming for you.
Yep.
Tell me, how can you stand there next to your big golf cart trying to squirrel away a secret or two?
You asked for it.
One thing we've seen from this mother, he likes to keep his documents squeaky clean. Well, his father didn't bother with his sister and brother, so he kept them there in the latrine. And
clever.
We know the showers where secrets were stuffed by Trump. Shove them there next to the sink.
That's right.
Things are gonna go much worse now. Secrets in the John.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't Photoshop. Showers were secrets were stuffed by Trump. We can't believe this is real. Things are gonna work out better when he goes to jail.
Yeah, you bet.
100 years with no bail. The showers were secrets.
All right, there you go.
That's great. Yeah. Our troubadour.
Yes. Thank you, Rocky Bob Mike. Seriously, Mike, thank you for jumping in last week. Really appreciate it.
Yes.
Rocky,
yes.
MNTN Mike, to follow him on Twitter. All right.
And follow him, subscribe on YouTube.
Oh, so great to have you back, my friend. I'm glad
it's
had
great to be back.
A great trip. I'm glad you
I
had
really
a yeah, it sounds like it was a fun time. We talked about it before the show, and it's nice. You had a vacation before our vacation. That's
right.
The way to do it. I think you
I
got
think
the right
important.
Idea. Yeah.
You want to rest up before you rest up, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we are going on vacation for a couple of weeks starting July 3rd. That's when we officially go. And it's going to be 2 weeks, and I think what we're going to end up doing is may end up skipping the 18th as well and returning on Wednesday the 19th.
All I know is I will be here every Tuesday, whether you're here or not.
Okay, now, you'll be sitting there at your microphone waiting.
That's right, and talking to myself.
Which makes me feel bad and makes me want to come back on the 18th. So I'm thinking about it. It's all going to depend on.
You need the break, my friend. You really do need the break. And, it seems like, okay, maybe this is not the best time because things are hopping, but when are things not hopping?
Yeah.
And it'll all be here when you get back, and I'll continue to keep people posted on developments on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll be, and I'm sure you will peek in on it occasionally yourself.
Yeah.
We'll be around, and we definitely will be back, and I look forward to it.
Well, we try to be consistent here. We try to stick around every day that we commit to doing a show, and then it gets to the point where about halfway through the year, I go, okay, that's enough.
I'm burned out, yeah.
The outrage tanks are empty, and I need a break.
Oh, well, they're never empty, but yeah, you need the break for sure. For your own mental health and for the good of us all, I think.
Okay.
You know, it's
all
good
right.
to take a break. I feel guilty about taking off. It was something I absolutely had to attend. It was wonderful. There was no way out of it, and I'm glad I went. I'm sorry that I'm back for 1 week, and then we go on vacation again. But, anyway, that's the way it worked out, and we'll try to do better.
So Donald Trump had a really entertaining time on Fox News Channel with Bret Baier. It's only appropriate that there's a tropical storm called Bret that's brewing in the Atlantic right now. So
there was one on Fox last night taking
that's
on
true.
Trump.
Better
than any journalist has interviewed Trump before because he, as hard as it is to believe, and Bret's been a fairly straight arrow at Fox News comparatively.
Yeah,
he certainly committed his sins. But last night's interview with Trump was every bit of what a journalist should be and mm-hmm. every bit of what a journalist should do. He didn't let Trump off on anything. He kept after him. And in the course of that, you call it entertaining. I call it self-indicting.
Yeah.
I think Trump,
oh God,
Trump
yes.
it was yet another confession. And all of what Trump said, and I know you have tapes to present, and I'm eager to hear them again, all of the stuff that Trump said can be admitted in court.
Yeah.
This is all now evidence. This is his lawyer's worst nightmare,
yeah.
which they knew they were getting when they took him on as a client.
He keeps making things worse for himself. He keeps proving my theory, my rule about Donald Trump's behavior, constantly mm-hmm. making the worst possible decisions. And then he has to make more terrible decisions to fix the previous terrible decisions.
To try unsuccessfully to fix the previous
yeah.
problems. It's calamity on calamity here.
That's right.
This is obviously the big story today is the Bret Baier interview on Fox
yeah.
and what came out of it. And so I'm excited to share that. And then we have obviously other stuff to talk about as well.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of bits here that I want to play that don't specifically have to do with the documents case with Mar-a-Lago and so on, which he's been okay. indicted for. These first couple of clips are just fun.
Okay.
You know, this is one of those.
We deserve that.
We totally do. And so we're going to start with this clip of Donald Trump talking about his call with Vladimir Putin. about Ukraine, because he thought, and this is entirely made up, I'm convinced that this is 1,000% bullshit.
Right.
And so this is Donald Trump describing a phone call with Vladimir Putin in which apparently Trump says he's lying that he threatened Vladimir Putin with something, you know, the fire and fury kind of threat
right.
that he used against Kim Jong-un back in the
right.
day. So here is this. And what I love most about this description by Trump is he tries to do a bit of the Putin accent.
Oh,
which
good.
Is just is hysterical when he tries to do this. Okay, no further ado. Here we go.
Look, I talked to him. I said, if you do it, there's going to be hell to pay. It's going to be a catastrophe. Don't do it. He said, no, 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 you won't do that. I told him I was going to do something. He said,
oh, you know what that is? That's also his Kim Jong-un impression. When he talks
oh,
to
I
Kim
see.
Jong-un
Universal,
or
yeah.
Yeah, President Xi, he's like, no, 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 do not do that. You should not do that. He has a way of speaking like this with all foreign people. Foreign people all sound like this to Donald Trump. And you'll hear more of this.
He has one stereotype for the rest of the world.
That's exactly right.
No, 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 you will not do that. I said, I will, Vladimir, I will do it. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to do it.
You're and you know what? He didn't believe
take off.
Me. Whatever. What? It was pretty bad. And he didn't believe me at all, except for maybe 10%. And 10% is all you needed.
Yeah, he's threatening nuclear war against
insane.
Vladimir Putin.
Right, the man is insane. We have to continually agree and understand and underscore the man is insane.
Yes, there is no way that this MF-er called Vladimir Putin and threatened to nuke Russia if Vladimir Putin tried anything against Ukraine. There
no.
is no way that that happened.
That's laughable as his threats to Kim Jong-un were laughable, except yeah. for the fact that he was president at the time, and that made them scary.
Right.
But I mean, the fact that he's president makes them scary. The threats in and of themselves are laughable.
Yeah. Well, let's just take him at face value for a second on this clip. And I'm not going to make a giant capital case out of this first throwaway lie from him.
Right.
But the fact that Donald Trump has this persona in which he feels as though he could just willy-nilly threaten nuclear war against any other foreign country and not have that eventually blow back against the United States
right.
is absolutely insane. I mean, I'm surprised. And I've talked about this a lot. I'm not breaking any news here. But throughout those 4 years when he was president, I was convinced every single morning that today could be the day that the nuclear
him.
Missiles fly. And
yeah.
that is inherently destabilizing. You cannot run a country, you cannot run foreign affairs based on that destabilization, that tactic where I you know what, look, I've got nuclear weapons pointed at you, so you better look out, you.
I, you know, he believes that he is invincible. We
yeah.
all know that. He believes he's invincible, and I think he has or had the same impression of the United States, that it too was invincible. And somebody made the mistake of telling him, you are the most powerful man in the world. Yeah. And he took it literally.
Exactly.
Too literally.
So the next thing is something I like to call pulling a Schecter. We all know the great clip of Cliff Schecter on MSNBC back in, I believe, 2006. He was on with Cleta Mitchell, who's now a Trump disciple, a Trump defender, a Trump lawyer. And Cliff Schecter just let loose on this list that went on and on and on about all the different Republican sex scandals. It was just one thing after another and another and another and another and another. It was like Godzilla crushing Tokyo. That's what that Cliff Schecter clip is like. If you want to see it, go to YouTube and type in Cliff Schecter, Cleta Mitchell, and you can watch it from beginning. I've played it a bunch of times on the show. I think everyone's familiar with it. But Bret Baier did the same thing with Donald Trump, this time.
Rub-a-dope.
Yes, refuting the whole idea that Donald Trump hired the best people. And,
right.
And also underscoring the fact that everyone around Donald Trump has now turned on Donald Trump, or Donald Trump has turned on them.
And Brett's asking a fair question here.
Yeah, exactly. But this is beautiful.
In 2016, you said that. I'm going to surround myself with only the best and most serious people.
Well, I did do that.
This
and we
time,
had tremendous luck. We had the best economy we've ever had.
This
the world
time,
has ever seen.
Your Vice President Mike Pence is running against you.
Yeah.
Your Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, she's
go.
Running against you. Your former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, said he's not supporting you. You mentioned National Security Advisor John Bolton. He's not supporting you either. You mentioned Attorney General Bill Barr, says you shouldn't be president again. Calls you the consummate narcissist and troubled man. You recently called and Barr a gutless pig. Second Defense Secretary is not supporting you, called you irresponsible. This week, you and your White House called your White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, weak and ineffective and born with a very small brain. You called your acting White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, a born loser. You called your first Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, dumb as a rock. And your first Defense Secretary, James Mattis, the world's most overrated general. You called your White House Press Secretary, Kate Kennedy, milquetoast. And multiple times, you've referred to your Transportation Secretary, Elaine Chao, as Mitch McConnell's China-loving wife.
Oh, my God.
So, why did you hire all of them in the first place?
Because I hired 10 to 1 that were fantastic. We had a great economy. We had phenomenal people in charge of the economy. We had phenomenal people in the military. I'm not a fan of Milley, and I'm not a fan of certain of the television people. But I knocked out ISIS. I defeated ISIS. They said, no. Mattis, it would take 3 years, and I don't think we can do it. I did it in a period of, like, 4 weeks.
There's
a
lot of people who praise you for your policies. I just said that.
That's true. Well, I mean, you just went through a list. But don't forget, for everyone you say, I had 10 that love us.
Yeah, that's a big lie.
And one thing happens, I find, with...
All right, shut up. Yeah, a few things on this particular clip. First of all, I was disappointed that they cut away from Trump's face as Bret Baier was doing the list. I would have loved to have seen Donald Trump's reaction through all of that. And
that
instead,
video, they used two cameras, so that video should be available. Yeah.
Yeah. God, I would love to see that. Instead, they showed all the different people in a row. Wow,
sure.
So there was
TV.
That. Yeah, yeah. But the second thing was that he lied about ISIS. He has not defeated ISIS. He keeps saying this over and over again, and I think it's starting to seep into the consciousness of the American people, if it hasn't already. He has not defeated ISIS. Go to Google News right now and type in ISIS attack, and you'll see one in Uganda. You'll see one that I think was thwarted in Iran. ISIS is still around. ISIS is still threatening people. I think they threatened a pride event in Vienna, Austria. These are just off the top of my head. These are things I remember seeing in the news. I didn't write any of this down. ISIS is still a thing, and Donald Trump keeps saying that he defeated it and crushed it and destroyed it and doesn't exist anymore. That is 1,000% a lie, and we cannot let him continue to get away with that kind of lie and all of the myriad other ones that he tells.
The easy solution there is put him in jail, which is where I definitely believe he's headed. The question is, will it be in time? And we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I had made my own list I made the little joke about people getting injured jumping off the Trump bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah.
I made my own list, and many of the names you just heard Bret Baier mention, but I've got a few that he didn't mention. Here are the people who've abandoned and or attacked Trump just in the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
Mike Pence, Bill Barr, Mike Pompeo, Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Paul Ryan, Ken Buck, Asa Hutchinson, John Bolton, and Mick Mulvaney. Now, like I said, some of those Baier mentioned, but I had a few in there that he didn't, and the list is growing. It's interesting to see, as the Republican Party continues to divide, where this is headed.
It's so entertaining to see him have to face his own fuckery. I wish I would have seen his face while that was happening.
And the irony is, he didn't have to do it.
The irony
is, his ego had him back on the air where he could further endanger himself, and he did. He's in hotter water today than he was 24 hours ago.
Oh, yes. And we're not even done yet.
Right.
This is the serious shit now that we're going to get into regarding the boxes and what other presidents did with documents and the Iran document. That'll be the last clip that we play. So here's Donald Trump talking about the boxes, what was in the boxes, why he didn't turn over the boxes. Implicating himself all over the goddamn place. Here we go. Yeah.
Please, could we have it back?
And they asked for that.
Because they have no.
They did ask for it.
No. And
they said,
I gave
can you give
some,
the documents back?
And we were talking.
And then they said they went to DOJ to subpoena you to get them
which
back.
They've never done.
Like, okay, I want to go back initially where he says they asked for it and he said no. And then Bret Baier contradicts him and said we were talking about it, which is he just contradicts himself right there within the first the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, we came in kind of in the middle of a statement where he was saying all the National Archives had to do was just say please can we have them back. That's all they had to do.
Exactly.
And he says they were negotiating, which isn't entirely true, and he's got the timeline all wrong, and the timeline makes all the difference here.
Yeah, so I'm going to start this again. Listen for him backpedaling right away.
Please, could we have it back?
And they asked for that.
Because they have no.
They did ask for it.
No.
They asked for it. No.
They said, can you give the documents back?
And we were talking.
And we were talking.
So either they asked for it or they didn't ask for it.
Right.
Which is it, you idiot?
He's trying to have it always.
Yes, exactly.
They went to DOJ to subpoena you to get them
which
back.
They've never done before.
Right. But why not just hand them over then?
Because I had boxes. I want to go through the boxes and get all my personal things out. I don't want to hand that over to NARA yet. And I was...
Okay, let's stop there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this is, Buzz? This is the equivalent of saying, I just didn't have time to do my taxes.
Very much like that. And it also reveals something that concerns psychologists, as many aspects of Trump do. There's psychologists know more about this than I do, but there's something about people who collect memorabilia.
Yeah.
That's an insecurity in their souls.
Uh-huh.
That they have to have these things to prove the good they've done or the good they believe they've done. And so he collected, if people gave him shirts or hats or shoes or whatever, he collected those. And apparently when they packed in a hurry, they stuffed those in with a lot of top secret documents at the same time.
Well, I remember Jesse Waters when the story first broke and there was the search at Mar-a-Lago, Jesse Waters saying, hey, he's a Mementos guy. And that was the excuse. And that's been the excuse all along. He just likes to collect things.
He is a Memento guy, but it doesn't excuse taking, keeping, and refusing to return national secrets.
Yes. We've seen him playing golf. We've seen him hobnobbing at Mar-a-Lago. Right. We've seen him invading weddings with his ridiculous grievance list. Just on and on and on. Donald Trump's got plenty of free time, goddammit. And he certainly got people who could have gone through all those boxes, like Walt Nauta, for example, and picked out all of the classified documents and handed them over. By the way, Walt Nauta doesn't have a goddamn security clearance, and it doesn't even matter because Donald Trump believes he declassified all that crap. But I'm getting way ahead of ourselves here, but let's continue with this stream of lies.
It's very busy, as you've sort of seen.
Yeah, but according to the indictment, you then tell this aide to move to other locations after telling your lawyers to say you'd fully complied with the subpoena when you hadn't.
But before I send boxes over, I have to take all of my things out. These boxes were interspersed with all sorts of things. Golf shirts, clothing, pants.
Man, woman, camera, TV. I love it when he tries to do these lists.
There were pants. I want to underscore this. There were pants in with national security secrets.
That's exactly right. Who knows pants. Whether they had been laundered, by the way, which exactly. is even more disgusting.
You.
Yeah, I know.
Shoes. There were many things. I would say much, much more. Not that I know of, but not that I know of. But everything was declassified. And Biden didn't have the right to do that because he wasn't president.
I love how he deflects over to Joe Biden here when right. he's in trouble. right. Yeah. But what he's admitting to here is he's admitting to withholding documents from the goddamn grand mm-hmm. jury.
Because he hadn't had time to go through the boxes, Bob.
Yes. He's so busy. He's such a busy guy playing
you try that.
Rounds
you try goal. That. You try that in court.
That's right.
Go ahead.
He had to personally dig that grave for Ivana and stick those documents in there with her, right? Mm-hmm. he was busy doing that.
I'm still open to that theory, by the way.
It's a fun one, that's for sure. What else here? Oh, yes, Eric Erickson, son of Eric. This was an amazing admission about this particular clip by Eric Erickson on Twitter. And Eric Erickson, to be clear, Eric Erickson's a Trump defender. And I want to shoehorn in the name Eric Erickson one more time because it's fun. It's so fun to say, right? Mm-hmm. He said, guys, Trump admitted on TV tonight he withheld documents from the grand jury. Game over legally. What an idiot. Right. Holy crap.
All true.
Yeah. Sounds like Bill Barr. Bill Barr's been all over the place going, I think his and goose is cooked.
We don't forgive any of these people for what they have done over the course of the Trump years, but the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So as long as they're helping us take down the greatest criminal in the federal government of all time, we accept and appreciate their help.
Well, this is a matter of the call is coming from inside the House, and that's why this Eric Erickson quote is so important, because you're hearing these kinds of things from people who are full-blown Trump loyalists, full-blown MAGA people. And even they're going, and obviously Brett Baer went through that whole list of people who've been criticizing Donald Trump, including John Bolton, for God's sake, Bill Barr, as we said. And so this shows and illustrates gigantic cracks in the facade. I think now you're going to start to see some of these other Republican candidates doing a full court press, trying to push against that facade and break on through using those cracks as a method of doing that. Yeah.
And in court, the last thing any lawyer would want would be for Trump to take the stand. They don't want that. But you know what?
Yeah.
He's already testified. Because again, these Brett Baer tapes and other things he said are all admissible in court. They'll be hearing a lot from Donald Trump, and they will... once it's laid out for them, will not like what they hear. I'm talking about the jury here.
So that's
there's a legal aspect to this. It's as if Trump now works for the Justice Department because he's prosecuting himself.
Yes,
and,
he is.
This as if I was convinced and I remain convinced that this documents case is going to put him in prison. Other things may as well, but the documents case that Brett Baer is so deftly focusing on in this interview, that's going to be the one that puts him in prison for the rest of his life. I'm convinced it's absolutely going to happen.
Yes. So here we go. This is Donald Trump talking about other presidents and what they did with the documents. So we're going to do this clip and then we'll take a short break and come back and do the Iran document as the last clip. Okay, so here we go.
I'm going to belabor this.
Other
specific
presidents, when they leave, they take the papers. They have thousands and thousands.
No, they don't. Of course, we've all talked about this already, and he's still playing this ridiculous game as though none of that happened. That, what happens very often, sometimes a couple of documents get mixed in with other documents that they're allowed to take. And that certainly happened with Pence and Biden, et cetera.
And a lot of presidents. And it's usually they're few in number. Yeah. They're usually not terribly consequential. And as Bob said, they're in with other stuff. So they were taken. They were taken by accident, and again, they are very, very few. Trump had boxes of documents.
Yes.
And we know of at least 31 that he wasn't supposed to have and refused to turn over, despite a court order, a subpoena to do so. So he's in a lot of trouble here.
Yeah, and there's the other aspect of it, too, where sometimes presidential records are handled by NARA after the fact. When Donald Trump talks about Chinatown, something about Chinatown in Washington, D.C., and the you know, he's talking about the empty, I don't know what it was, a shopping mall or Chinese restaurant or something.
Something, bowling alley, I don't remember.
Yeah, essentially what we're talking about here is NARA working with any number of previous presidents of the Obama Presidential Library and so on, and they go through in tandem and decide what documents should go into the library and what documents should be returned to NARA. It's a cooperative venture. They're on loan from NARA. There's a process here that is by and large adhered to, but Donald Trump's turning that process into, yeah, Mike Pence walked away with thousands of documents, and Barack Obama and Jimmy Carter, they all took thousands and thousands of documents. That's a gigantic lie.
Nixon had it. Carter had
their
it. The
argument
Bushes
is that
had
these
it.
Are super sensitive national security documents.
Sure. I'm sure, all right, so here's I'm sure you'll see real super sensitive that Biden has, because Biden has far more than anybody's ever kept.
And of course, Trump can say that because he knows there's no way any of his people are going to verify that detail, right?
Right.
That's his MO.
He turned them over when asked.
No, he didn't. He still hasn't given the 1,850 boxes that's stored at the University of Delaware. In fact, they're fighting them in court.
Right. Okay, we're going to stop right there because that deserves a gigantic fact check. This 1,800 boxes, he was talking about that on the town hall, too, on CNN. And it kept waffling, by the way, back and forth between 850 and 1,800. You just can't get his lies straight. So CNN presented, and there were many other websites that presented fact checks on this, but CNN wrote, Trump's vague insinuations that there is something improper about the existence of the Biden collection at the University of Delaware are baseless. The collection of donated documents is from Biden's 36-year tenure as a U.S. senator for Delaware.
Right.
Unlike presidents who are subject to the Presidential Records Act, senators own their office's documents and can do whatever they want with them. Donate them to colleges, keep them at their homes, give them to journalists, even throw them in the trash. So Trump is taking that and turning it into, Biden's got 1,850 documents or maybe 1,800 documents or some other bullshit made up number at the University of Delaware. And he's broken the law. So therefore, I should be exonerated somehow.
And he keeps citing the Presidential Records Act as his defense. It isn't a defense. He doesn't understand what the Presidential Records Act actually says. What we have here is someone who has defied a subpoena to return military secrets that don't belong to him. And, you know, he was busy and he wanted to go through the boxes. You know how busy I've been. This is the guy who's going to court on, as far as we know at this point, August 14th.
He's busy standing around making this noise. He's lost his goddamn mind. Yeah. That's for sure.
And I take some joy in the fact that that becomes increasingly obvious.
Yes. You know,
I'm hoping it gets worse.
Yeah, well, here we go. Here's more worse.
And they're fighting them. And
but he opened
boxes,
up for them to look at it.
Excuse me. The boxes from Chinatown.
China.
He didn't turn them over. He sent them up to his lawyer in Boston, to look at before they handed them over.
And there are special counsel is looking at that, and we'll see what comes out of it. But I do want to just
you can
end
imagine
with this. I don't want to dwell on it. But according to the
presidents, when they leave, they take the papers. They have thousands.
It's just started over again. All right.
Right.
Well, there you go. All right. So that's that particular clip. Okay. We still have one more to go here.
One more.
Is everyone okay? We okay with hearing Trump's voice and all that shit? Because this is historic, all right? This is something that's going to come up in court. This could end up being something that pushes it over the top as far as innocent versus guilty.
It's not only does DOJ have, Jack Smith specifically, have the evidence that they need for conviction, and now they have repeated audio confessions, and in some cases video confessions, from Donald Trump that can be played at trial, whether he's ever called to the stand or not.
Yeah.
These are the reasons I am increasingly convinced that he's going away.
Yeah. It just depends on where he goes away to.
These are serious crimes, though, and I just don't care where who you make as judge or where they put the trial. In the end, I think he will be found guilty and sentenced to prison for what will turn out to be the rest of his life. I don't know that Eileen Cannon is going to remain on this case, but so far she seems to understand the rocket docket aspect of the Southern District of Florida. And so she set a trial date for August 14th, which is, what, five, six, 7 weeks away, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Starting very soon, that could change, but things are moving along, and Jack Smith is certainly pressing for a quick prosecution at this point. We'll talk more about that stuff after the last Bret Baier clip.
Yeah, exactly. Just some more details on the trial date being set here. It says here, omnibus order setting trial date and establishing pretrial instructions and sentencing procedures as to Donald J. Trump. In limine, which is, I think, means at first or the first thing, first motions due by 7/24/23. So we're just a little bit more than a month away from these first motions being due. And Donald Trump barely has a defense team in place, much less a defense strategy other than what he's blurting like farts on Fox News Channel. So motions are due by 7/24/23. Calendar call is set for 8/8/23, 1:45 p.m. in Fort Pierce Division before Judge Eileen M. Cannon. I still can't believe we're talking about her. I was comparing it last week, Buzz, to like the ending of Misery, where Kathy Bates, you think she's dead, and oh my God, she's alive again, or Glenn Close at the end of Fatal Attraction.
Well, this ain't over, so she may or may not remain in place as the judge in this case, but so far, so good. We'll see. Perhaps she gotten spanked enough that she'll behave, even though she's only had 14 days of trial experience.
Right. Well, the jury trial is set for 8/14/23, so the 14th of August coming up in Fort Pierce Division before Judge Cannon, signed by Judge Cannon on 6/20/23, see attached document for blah, blah, blah. And just so you're aware, as a matter of course here on this particular bit of news, Bradley Moss tweeted yesterday some information that's important when as far as expectations go with this. He said, ignore Judge Cannon's trial date for Trump. That date isn't going to hold. I assume it'll be pushed. That's me adding. What I'm seeing here from Bradley Moss is that, it's probably going to get pushed. The date that matters is the deadline for pretrial motions and motions in limine to exclude arguments / evidence at trial. Those are due in 4 weeks. Trump barely has the defense team in place.
Right. Well, and the evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah.
The evidence and his own testimony.
I got to do this. I just have to laugh for a second. This is fun. Trump's in big trouble. Got my big cigar. Okay, enough of that. All right, still a lot more to come. We got to talk about this article about Merrick Garland and Chris Wray apparently delaying the investigation into Trump for more than a year. Mm-hmm. We'll dig into that. I know you've got a bunch to say about that, as do I. And a whole lot more. Let's see what else. Oh, yeah, Hunter Biden in the news today. Some big news as far as he goes. And your regular reminder that RFK Jr. is a gigantic kook. So we'll talk about that, too, here. Still to come on our big Tuesday show. But first, the Patreon app for your smartphone is the best way to stay up to date with new episodes of the Bob Seska Show. I get questions every once in a while. Bob, do you have an app for the show? And I say, no, I don't, but I have a Patreon app. And that's the best way to keep track of when new episodes drop. So every time there's a new episode. Yeah. Oh, you use the Patreon app as well?
I do.
Yes, it's a great way to do it. You can set up your notifications. You're going to get an automatic alert on your phone. Notifications for the free shows on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Plus, you're going to get notifications for the Friday after party and the Shadow Docket shows too. Everything we put out there pops up on the Patreon page too. You can listen at home or in the car with just a couple of swipes, and you can join our community of listeners in the comments under each episode. So subscribe for as little as $1 a month. All it takes is $1 a month at bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/bobseskashow. Then you can download the Patreon app from the App Store onto your phone, and you've done it. Voila. Again, that's bobseskashow.com, and we thank you.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Bob Seska!
All-time favorites all day long.
Inside music, me dry. I'm out of feeling key. Won't you get higher? You won't go, so I must lean and free myself. I can't take it no more.
Oh yeah, this is a great Vixen Noir. Replaying this track because I love it. Song called I Love You, and this features the great King Cyborg also. Yeah, one of our favorites here in the show, of course. You got to follow both of them on Instagram. If you're on Instagram, follow King Cyborg. Just search for the name King Cyborg and you'll find her. Also search for Vixen Noir on Instagram and you can follow her too. All right, bobseska.com/music to submit your work to the show. And while you're there, make sure to click on this episode dated 6/20/23. Scroll on down on that page, and you'll find links for all the independent recording artists we feature here on the show.
I love the fact that the song is called I Love You, and yeah, it begins, the first two words, the first two lyrics in the song are, you suck.
Yeah.
And I thought, that immediately got my attention. Hey, fortunately, it got better after that.
Right. Oh, that's the great Vixen Noir. And it's, yeah, by the way, yeah, it's great, if you're searching for the song on your favorite digital music player, I Love You, it's just the letter U for you in there. So it's not the word U, it's the letter U. The best way to do it is just go to bobseska.com, find the podcast page for this episode, and click away. Get these songs into your record collection, all right?
You can dance to them.
Yeah, and you know what? Speaking of the independent recording artists we play here on the show,
yes,
next Wednesday, the Wednesday before we go on vacation, uh-huh, I decided to do a special episode of the interview show, the Wednesday interview show.
Okay.
I am welcoming the great Cersei Link and Christian Nesmith, who's the son of Mike Nesmith from the Monkees.
Right.
Christian and Cersei have this amazing album that I've been stanning for some time now. It's called Cosmologica. And I said, you know what? This is one of my all-time favorite albums. I mean, not just one of my favorite independent recording artist albums, but one of my all-time favorite prog albums. And I need to get Christian and Cersei on so we can do like a track-by-track discussion about this particular album. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do a deep dive into Cersei Link and Christian Nesmith's album, Cosmologica, next Wednesday. So if you're into that album, we're going to do that. That's fun.
I love interviews with musicians because you,
yeah,
as those of us who are lay people who know nothing about music,
right?
It's fascinating. I learn a lot when I listen to that, and I like what I learn.
It is, if you're into prog music, I would put this in my maybe top three favorite prog albums of all time, Cosmologica. It is such an incredible piece of work. It is so complex. And then when you realize that it's just two people, it's just Cersei and Christian.
Right. Yeah, always amazing.
Christian plays all of the instruments. And when you hear each individual instrument and the compositions themselves, it is mind-blowingly good. So I can't wait to dig into the construction of the album, what inspired the album, what it means. Like when I listen to this album, I'm like, what's Cersei telling me about the universe in this album? It is just one of those things that I can't stop listening to. So I can't wait to talk with both of them.
Do these two individuals know what they're in for?
You know what? My email was so effusive that I think they do. I think they understand that I'm just
a fanboy.
An ultimate fanboy when it comes to this album. Oh my God. Okay, so back to serious things here on the Big Tuesday show. So
yeah.
Trump on the Iran document at Bedminster. This was another fascinating bit of obvious duplicity by Donald Trump regarding this. Because the thing is, Buzz, they've got the tapes. They've got the transcripts. Right. There were people in the room. Everyone knows. And so if this becomes his legal defense, and if this is something that he confirms, this particular defense that he's going to use in this clip, if he confirms this while under oath on the stand, they're going to hit him with perjury. And right. I know you have more to add on that front as far as additional charges, new things that are going
to
come up.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. But I want to say that legal experts are saying that this is not the defense Trump's lawyers had in mind. And, but that now that he said it, it has become their defense, whether they like it or not. And it's not a good one. He's screwed in that category as well.
Yeah.
This clip you're about to play, and the one you played about I was busy, there were pants. you know, when these two clips are probably the two most important things to emerge out of the interview. These are the two that will do him in at trial if the pile of evidence does not.
How much you want to bet David Letterman laughed at the idea that there were pants with the documents? Because I don't know, pants. That just seems like a Letterman thing. Worldwide pants. Yeah.
Right.
All right, here's Trump making an ass of himself last night.
I don't want to dwell on it, but according to the indictment, you were here at Bedminster on July 21st, 2021, after you're no longer president, and you were recorded saying that you had a document detailing a plan of attack on another country that was prepared by the U.S. military for you when you were president, the Iran attack plan. You remember that?
Ready?
You were recorded.
I love when he starts out like that. He does that a lot, where he goes, are you ready? Oh, my God. I'm going to hit you with a truth bomb. Ready for it? All right. Hang on tight. Here we go. Here comes a gigantic whopper goddamn lie.
Right.
Yeah.
You ready means I'm about to lie, yes.
Yeah.
Attack on another country that was prepared by the U.S. military for you when you were president. The Iran attack plan. You remember that?
Ready?
You were recorded.
It wasn't a document.
Okay.
I had lots of paper. I had copies.
Okay, so stop right there. It wasn't a document.
A document.
He said. No, that's totally wrong. It absolutely was a document.
People in the room will testify that it was.
Yes, he's waving it around and saying, this is top secret. This is really super secret. And the people around him are going, oh my God, we're in trouble now. I mean, they were actually joking about the fact that he's waving around this classified document that he's claiming is secret, that he doesn't have the power to declassify.
But, by the way, the people in the room, the people he was bragging this to, were Mark Meadows ghostwriters for his memoir. So these are the authors of what would be Mark Meadows' memoir. And that's who Trump is waving this war document around in front of.
Yes. So his defense is not that he even had a document. He's saying that he's going to say here that he's got an article about it.
Newspaper clippings, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's got. Sure. That's the thing he said he was unable to declassify because he's no longer president. I gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
These are newspaper articles. I had copies of magazines.
I know. This is specifically a quote. You're quoted on the recording saying the document was secret, adding that you could have declassified.
You know, I got to stop right there because I can't get over the fact that Brett Baer wasn't taking any shit from this guy.
Right. Not for a second.
Yeah. The last time I think we saw this kind of interview was Jonathan Swan after the 2020 election. You remember that famous one where Swan's going through all the things and there's a meme going around with Swan's kind of confused face as Donald Trump is trying to explain all this to him. This is the same kind of thing, although this one I think is even more important because Donald
Trump. And timely.
Exactly, because he's implicating himself here.
Right, right. Just as he prepares to go to trial. Yeah. Implicating himself going into the trial.
Right.
I did while you were president, but quote, now I can't. You know, this is still secret, highly confidential. And the indictment cites the recording and the testimony from people in the room saying you showed it to people there that day. So you say on this, on tape.
This is just the
he didn't show anything. It's just the opposite, he's going to say here. Again, I hope that's his criminal defense. I hope he uses that in court because he is going to be socked with perjury charges. Abso-fucking-lutely. Trump always makes things worse for Trump. Writ large.
Morning from people in the room saying you showed it to people there that day. So you say on this, on tape.
It says just the opposite.
That you can't declassify it, so why have it?
When I said that I couldn't declassify it now, that's because I wasn't president. I never made any bones about that.
Okay, bingo, bingo. Right. He had classified documents that weren't declassified. That's him and just admitting that he had these documents. They were not declassified. He didn't declassify them, and he couldn't declassify them because he's no longer president.
Right, while not president, while defying subpoenas to turn that stuff over.
Wow, wow, wow. There it is, right there.
Going into trial.
This is on Fox News Channel, may I remind you.
Murdoch is done with Trump. I mean, that should be very obvious by now. I don't know. All they can do now is be anti-Biden because I don't see them supporting DeSantis particularly. We'll see how that plays out.
Am I too excited about this? I mean, this is a major prong of this case.
It's finally here. And what I think we're going to talk about next is the first thing I want to say about it is we are now in the prosecution of Donald Trump where we need to be. That's the good news. The bad news is we're a year or two too late, and it's entirely likely that we won't get a verdict in this case until after not only the election but the inauguration.
Right.
And that is unfortunate, and we'll talk about how we got there next.
Yeah. Let's bust through the rest of this clip so we can dig into this Merrick Garland article.
It says just the opposite.
That you can't declassify, so why have it?
When I said that I couldn't declassify it now, that's because I wasn't president. I never made any bones about that. When I'm not president, I can't declassify
that. That's what you said. You didn't declassify it.
I said I couldn't
declassify
it. But that wasn't a document, Brett. There was no document. That was a massive amount of papers and everything else talking about Iran and other things. And it may have been held up or may not, but that was not a document. I didn't have a document per se. There was nothing to declassify.
Per se. Just want to mention that. Per se.
Right. Now, these were newspaper stories, magazine stories, and articles.
I'm just saying what the indictment says.
Well,
the recording and the people in the room who testified.
These people are very dishonest people. They're thugs.
That he's talking about the other people in the room, you nincompoop.
Being thugs, yes.
Yeah. Brett Baer is mentioning the other people in the room, and Trump goes to DOJ and thinks he's talking about the thugs at DOJ.
Right.
And he's not. He was talking about Meadows Ghostwriter, et cetera. Yeah.
The thugs, if you look at what they've done to other people, what they've done to, and overturned in the U.S. Supreme Court, these are thugs.
The suggestion was that you wanted this as evidence that the military, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Milley, had preemptively sent you plans for a possible attack on Iran and that you didn't order that to happen. That's the suggestion.
I never ordered it to happen, no.
But that's why you wanted the document.
I don't think I've ever seen a document from Milley. Milley, frankly, was incompetent. The last one I'd want to attack with as my leader would be Milley. That I can tell you.
All right, last thing on this. I don't want to dwell on it.
That I can tell you. Oh, he is so screwed.
He is screwed
a thousand different ways, and he's only screwing himself more. He's making things so much worse for himself, and I'm so here for it. Please, please proceed, as our favorite president once said.
Keep talking.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so moving along here to this gigantic bombshell Washington Post story about Merrick Garland and DOJ and Chris Wray. Just to set this up, in case you're unaware of what's going on with all of this, a Washington Post investigation found that more than a year would pass before prosecutors and FBI agents jointly embarked on a formal probe of actions directed from the White House to try and steal the election. Even then, the FBI stopped short of identifying the former president as a focus of that investigation. A wariness about appearing partisan, institutional caution, and clashes over how much evidence was sufficient to investigate the actions of Trump and those around him all contributed to the slow pace. Garland and the Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco charted a cautious course aimed at restoring public trust in the department, while some prosecutors below them chafed, feeling top officials were shying away from looking at evidence of potential crimes by Trump and those close to him, the Post found. Whether a decision about Trump's culpability for January 6 could have come any earlier is unclear. The details in examining that question began before Garland was even confirmed. Michael Sherwin, who's the former U.S. attorney in D.C., senior Justice Department officials, and Paul Abate, the top deputy to FBI Director Chris Wray, quashed a plan by prosecutors in the U.S. attorney's office to directly investigate Trump associates for any links to the riot, deeming it premature, according to five individuals familiar with the decision. This is interesting, too, because I was actually saying for a lot of this period of time since January 6th, that the U.S. attorney in D.C. is kind of the point person in all of this. And clearly, that U.S. attorney, who hadn't been replaced at that point, I think he eventually was replaced by Joe Biden, but at that point in time, that U.S. attorney wasn't moving on this case. So the blame isn't entirely on Garland. You can also put it at the feet of this guy, Michael Sherwin. But there it is. So this is what's causing all kinds of outrage right now.
There's so many reasons for the delay. What you read of the article touched on some of them. But there's sort of longstanding DOJ policy. There's the fear. James Comey screwed things up not only for the election that brought Trump into the White House, but he made the Department of Justice gun-shy. They were afraid. They didn't want to ever be in that situation again. The FBI didn't ever want to be in a situation again where something so outrageous could happen. And so they were doing extra caution. And, of course, with Republicans bearing down on them, they at first, I mean, this all started when Trump was president, but they had to keep it on the down low. I often wonder if Christopher Wray's motive for not moving had a lot to do with protecting his own job and worrying about who might replace him.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Chris Wray is a good guy or a bad guy. I think the verdict is still out on that. I'm willing to accept either answer once we have the evidence.
Yeah.
I think Merrick Garland ultimately did the right thing by appointing Jack Smith as special prosecutor, special counsel, excuse me. And this is the great thing about Jack Smith is he's made up for a lot of lost time here because he's moving very quickly.
Yes.
And he's chosen a district with a rocket docket to try to get this thing moving because he understands more than anyone, perhaps, the importance of getting this done as soon as possible.
Right.
The DOJ was gun shy. They had partly out of tradition, partly out of what had happened with Comey. And also the other thing that happened is the transition. The transition was not good between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, and it took time. And it took Merrick Garland, once he was confirmed, 10 months to find a U.S. attorney for D.C. To take over there.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of that change of government thing that slowed things down a bit. I'm not making excuses, and I think where DOJ and the FBI failed is, and they were, the other thing you were using is the traditional ladder approach. They start at the bottom and work your way up. That's what they do with organized crime. We talked about that at the time and accepted that as, okay, I understand what they're doing here. But they got to a certain point when they got to Stuart Rhodes and the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, they couldn't go any farther. They couldn't find a connection. But they were starting to see things, you know, from the top. Here's what turned the DOJ around, if I may.
Yes.
A combination of public pressure. Rachel Maddow played a role in that.
Mm.
The ruling of a federal judge who said Trump has clearly committed crimes here. That was a screaming siren at the Department of Justice to charge the guy. And also, very importantly, the work of the J6 committee, which because of their work, the DOJ finally started looking into the fake electors scheme. So, and all of these things happened much later than they should have.
Yeah.
And I think it's because DOJ didn't understand, you know, I told you the reasons they were gun shy, and they also didn't understand the urgency of this to democracy. I think Jack Smith understands that. I'm glad it's in his hands. Like I said earlier, we are where we need to be. We're just a little late.
A lot late, as far as I'm concerned, because now we're pushing into that campaign territory,
right.
And 2025 is bearing down on us, and that presents a gigantic roadblock in all of this, because who the fuck knows what's going to happen in 2024? Obviously, we have our optimistic points of view about Joe Biden getting reelected. But, you know, anything can happen.
It's been proven to us that anything can happen.
But I think what I've been saying all along with this, sort of balancing between, much like Stephanie Miller, in fact, balancing between, oh, God, when is this going to get it? When are they going to start investigating Donald Trump versus, well, I kind of know why they're not. I kind of I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand the reasoning, which is that there's this concern about precedent and history and institutions and caution. And that's something that we've been talking about for some time here on this show. And it's been a common point of discussion. I remember being on Sherry Jacobus's podcast, and Sherry Jacobus is no fan of Merrick Garland, if you follow her on Twitter. Right. So, and I mentioned to her, I said, you know, the explanation could simply be one that Garland has an eye on history. And that may be a mild way of putting it. I don't get the sense that Merrick Garland has any vested interest in protecting Donald Trump.
No, not at all. Yeah. I don't think there was any malice at any level, although there were, yes, there were FBI individuals and I believe also DOJ individuals who resisted, opposed, argued, but it was all a debate. And that was part of it. You know, there was a lot of naval contemplating and shuffling of feet and and debate and consideration. You want them to move thoughtfully, but this just went on for way too long. Mm-hmm. And there were people who resisted an investigation of Trump. Otherwise, I don't think there was any malice in the department itself, in the attorney general, certainly. It can be argued he was too slow to act. Some people continue to call for his firing. I disagree with that because, like I said, ultimately he did the right thing. It just took a long damn time, probably too long, to get here, but we are here. And I think Jack Smith's case is going to expand, and I'd like to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that with Donald Trump, you don't want to telegraph your moves too quickly, knowing the platform that he kind of has and the way he behaves toward these things, and his ability to concoct different lies and ways to wiggle out of accountability. And
so, I think he concocts them, yes.
He concocts them, yes. And they're all...
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but for that reason, maybe it was a better strategy to not reveal necessarily where they were going to go with this, hint at it. You know, there are a number of factors because we're in new territory here. And I think we need to bear that in mind. This is fresh. Donald Trump has pushed through so many norms and broken so many laws that we're in uncharted territory. This has never happened with an with a president or an ex-president before. And so Merrick Garland dropped into the middle of this, and he's expected, you know, again, I'm saying this from the perspective of someone who wanted it done yet. I wanted him in jail 2 years ago. But knowing what the situation is, knowing what the history is, knowing what the precedent is, that Merrick Garland probably didn't want to go in appearing as though there was an actual witch hunt.
Right. I know, they didn't want it to appear partisan. Like I said, they were still gun shy from what James Comey did. Again, Comey not only effed up the 2016 election, but he effed up the Department of Justice, which got completely afraid at that point because the public confidence in the Department of Justice and the FBI fell to a new low after Comey did what he did and got the results that he got. So they were very, very concerned about looking partisan. And again, I agree with those who would say they just didn't see the urgency of it. They didn't understand that democracy was really on the line here. I don't think they took it as seriously as they should. It took a lot of convincing. Like I said, it was maybe the J6 committee that got them going, or maybe it was that judge who said, you know, Trump has broken the law here. There were things that happened that gave them no choice, as I think we said months ago on the show, when we said the DOJ now has no choice but to charge Donald Trump, and they did. I also want to say about Jack Smith. Smith is in charge of all of this. Merrick Garland has signed off on all of it. He has come out and made public statements in support of Jack Smith and Jack's work. But Jack Smith hit the ground running. Normally, it would take a special counsel weeks, maybe months, to get up to speed on what's going on. Do you know Jack Smith issued his first subpoenas 4 days after he got the job?
Yeah.
4 days in, he's firing off subpoenas already, and he's been firing them ever since. As I said, have led to an expanded investigation.
One of the things that is important to bear in mind in all of this, too, okay. is this story could have been deliberately leaked from DOJ in order to make it seem as though the DOJ wasn't really eager to go after Donald Trump, to kind of blunt the attack that this is all part of a big witch hunt. This may be a political move by the Department of Justice to protect its independence, to protect itself from the accusation of partisanship. So that's something that we should bear in mind as well. These things have happened before. Yeah.
Well, it's great journalistic work by Carol Lenig and Aaron C. Davis. They did a tremendous job. They said it's a long article, but it doesn't seem to miss a trick. It seems to cover every aspect of how the investigation developed and why it took so long and what was going on through all of that and who was arguing for prosecution and who was arguing against it.
Yep.
So it's very, very educational and enlightening. And like I said, I came away with multiple conclusions from it. they took too damn long. And now it's going to be too, I'm afraid it's going to be too late, although I could be wrong about this. I'm afraid it's going to be too late for the 24 presidential election. But the good news is we are at least where we need to be. We just didn't get here in time. But ever forward, and I hope this sees its way to conclusion. Like I said, I think he will spend the rest of his life in prison because he is so incriminated. Or to put it another way, he is so fucked.
Yes, he very much is. All right, well, we got to talk about Hunter Biden here in a second. And I have a few things to say about the notion of show debates. I want to talk about that in the context of this RFK Jr., Joe Rogan, Elon Musk nonsense that's happening right now. Okay, one last break. Back with more show right after these words.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Ooh. Yeah. Tell me for the sun up. Where you wanna go? Tell me how you feeling now. If you wanna move slow, tell me for the time's up. Something that is moving slow. Tell me how you feeling now. If you wanna move slow.
Oh god, I love that loop. That guitar loop is amazing. This is the purest in a song called Summer. Because here we are, coming up on the end of June already.
Right. Tomorrow's the solstice.
Yeah. Hey, how about that? BobSeska.com/music to submit your work to the show. Get back into things here. Some encouraging news, right, Buzz?
Yeah. You know I love to share good news. And of course, the top story today is the Bret Baier story. Trump further incriminating himself, testifying against himself in court, which is where those tapes are going to end up. Yeah. And then there's the work of Jack Smith. And I'm not like a Jack Smith fanboy, but there is increasing evidence. You know, he's got the documents case. We all know about that. It now appears that either in a separate case or to expand this case, Jack Smith can now include charges of dissemination of classified material. That's thanks to the tape on which Trump bragged about and waved about the Iran attack document. So now dissemination could be added as a charge, either in the documents case or as a separate case. Jack Smith, we know, is investigating Trump for fraud, and that's the fundraising he's done off of his false election claims, even when he knew he had lost the election. That's fraud, and Jack Smith is investigating that. So that's why, like, three investigations there.
Yeah.
Pressure on Mike Pence not to do his duty as an elected official. Guess what? That's a crime. And it's possible, I don't have any confirmation of this, but it's possible Jack Smith is pursuing that charge. Now we're up to four, maybe. And then the last one is the fake elector scheme. Jack Smith is investigating Trump's role in the fake elector scheme, which, of course, overlaps with what Fannie Willis is doing in Fulton County, Georgia. This is, hey, huge. This is becoming a very widespread and dramatic case. Jack Smith, I think, is going to succeed in getting Trump, maybe not for everything, but for a lot of the big stuff.
And think about this. If only one-tenth of the legal trouble that Donald Trump is in turns into some sort of actual criminal sentencing, a verdict of guilty and criminal sentencing associated with that, that's still a gigantic deal. You know what I mean? Everything else could fall apart. And if just 10% of these charges stick to the wall and land on a sentence in a guilty verdict, that's a gigantic effing deal, right?
That's true. And Jack Smith doesn't need all these other cases, except for the fact that Trump broke some serious laws here that need to be prosecuted.
Yeah.
Jack Smith can put Trump in custody for the rest of Trump's life just with the documents case.
Right.
Now we've added, what, one, two, three, four other cases or possible cases against Trump, things that Jack Smith is expected to investigate or is already investigating, most of them already underway. The only one I'm not positive about is the one about pressuring Pence not to do his duty as an elected official. That's a huge crime, and I would be surprised if he didn't add that to the pile.
Well, the other thing, too, is there could be additional charges in New Jersey. Federal charges linked to the Mar-a-Lago documents.
Right.
And that is a card that I think Jack Smith is keeping up his sleeve for now.
And that, but weirdly, ties in with the whole LIV Golf thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because and you know, I'm sure, I think, and because remember, and I've said this before, but I want to remind people, Smith has subpoenaed Trump's business records. Why the business records? To see what kind of deals he made with the Saudis.
Yeah, yeah.
What he's gotten out of them, and that's what I think the New Jersey grand jury is largely about.
One last thing here, Buzz, on this topic.
Right.
I noticed that Lawrence O'Donnell was drawing similar parallels to our observations about the White House Plumbers miniseries.
Right.
Oh, and really? What's going on right now. Yeah. I wonder if Lawrence O'Donnell's been listening to this podcast. Because, I mean, it's so. not a hard conclusion to draw. I'm not saying that he stole it from us or anything like that in all seriousness. But it was, we were saying the same thing. We're talking about not very bright guys and things got out of hand. You can apply that to the White House Plumbers. You can apply that to Donald Trump and all of the nincompoops that orbit around him. And so that I was relieved to see that we were kind of on the right track with all of that, as confirmed by Lawrence O'Donnell.
They, and when I say they, I mean mainly Trump, have left a trail of breadcrumbs, a trail of evidence against him.
So meantime, Hunter Biden will plead guilty to $1.2 million in tax violations and a gun charge, getting 2 years probation and an order to enter a rehab-type program in exchange for wiping the gun charge. That's a far cry from the allegations from the, you know, MAGA Republicans, et cetera.
Of course it is. Of course. And maybe this gives them something to chew on. But like I said, like you just said, the gun charge is ultimately dropped here.
Yeah.
And the tax evasion thing, he can afford that, I suspect.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people have come to his aid. A lot of attorneys from across the country have come to his aid just because they see what the Republicans are doing to him and they don't like it and they want to stop it. And so he's got a good legal team.
Yeah.
This was a way, I think, to get this behind us, to make it less of an issue in his dad's reelection campaign.
Yeah.
It won't go away completely for them, but it in the minds of a lot of Americans who don't follow things closely, I think, okay, well, they've taken care of Hunter. You know, it may give them the vengeance they sought.
Yeah, that may scratch the itch. But as you said, I think the Republicans will continue their ridiculous investigations.
Yeah, because, they'll continue. Yeah. But everything else, I mean, okay, basically what Hunter Biden is saying here through his attorneys is, okay, these things I did.
Yeah, yeah.
The other things, no.
Right.
And the other things are so bizarre and so unsubstantiated, including that Joe Biden took a $10,000 bribe. So says a guy who told a guy, and they're all dead now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they got nothing. They really, I mean, they're very good at running with nothing. They will continue to run with nothing, but that's all they have left is nothing.
And bear in mind, too, that the Republican point, the intention of all of this, is not necessarily to find Hunter Biden crimes. It's to feed the Republican media apparatus, the Red Hat Entertainment Complex. That's what this is primarily about. It's a Ouroboros of disinformation, where the Republicans feed it to the Red Hat podcasters and websites, and then they feed that back into the people, and then the people vote for the politicians who feed it back to the Red Hat Entertainment Complex. You get the idea here.
I do. It's a political centipede, yes.
Yes, exactly. The human centipede of nonsense, right. Yeah. So your regular reminder that RFK Jr. is a kook, he's back with the anti-vax thing because he's pretending to run for president at this point, which he's not. By the way, he's not going to win a single primary caucus. He'll get a couple of delegates because that's just the way the system works. Usually people who challenge get, you know, a few nominal delegates. Right. Not a big deal. But in terms of the anti-vax shit, he went on Joe Rogan, and that turned into calls to have this scientist debate RFK Jr. on the Joe Rogan show. And I just want to say something about that particular thing so we're all clear about what this kind of a debate is all about, whether it's the context of this or some other issue on some other show. These show debates are nothing but pie fights. They solve nothing. No minds are ever changed. No one is ever convinced. There's never any clear winner. The reason why Joe Rogan wants to do this is it'll be good for podcast downloads. It'll be good for publicity. There is no intention here to find the truth.
Or to serve the public, yeah.
Exactly. It's to platform the disinformation being spread by RFK Jr. That's what this is all about. It has nothing to do with making sure the human population is healthy and protected from whatever.
And Red Hats are now stalking the house of this scientist, this doctor, pediatrician, Peter Hotez. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Peter Hotez, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I pronounced his name correctly. He has done so much good in the world, caring for children and others, children in foreign countries who need medicine. He's dedicated his life to making and keeping people healthy. And now Red Hats, because of the taunting from Elon Musk and Joe Rogan and others to get Dr. Hotez to debate them, you know, and what is it we're debating exactly? They want to debate vaccines, but what about that isn't settled yet?
Yeah.
You know, what about that tells us we don't know who was right and who was wrong? As you said, this is just for ratings and it's just for show. And it's very unfortunate that a scientist would be targeted like this.
Yeah. Well, these guys, what they like to do is they like to find, you know, if you hear that old commercial for, I forget which chewing gum it was, but 9 out of 10 dentists surveyed said that they recommend this and that. Well, what these guys do is they go to that 10th.
Right.
Expert
same with climate change.
Who disagrees with the other 9. And then they say, well, okay, well, this one person out of the other, out of 10, this one out of 10 has something to say. So let's listen to that person.
They've done it with the argument over evolution. They've done it with the argument over climate change.
Right.
And they did it and continue to do it with what's left of the argument over vaccines.
Yeah. And bear in mind, this is something else that RFK Jr. said some time ago. This is during the initial vaccine mandate debate and all that shit, the mask mandate debate. He said, they're going to have the right to compel unwanted medical interventions on us. The Nazis did that in the camps in World War II. They tested vaccines on gypsies and Jews. Matt gets one of these because this is nothing like what happened in the concentration camps. There is no comparison between the Holocaust and sitting here between watching, you know, binge watching Netflix, go over to the grocery store and get a vaccine. And that's like the goddamn Holocaust. Are you kidding me? This thing from RFK Jr., this one statement alone is like one dial click away from being Alex Jones shrieking about satanic lesbians.
Right.
That's how kooky this is.
I admire Dr. Hotez for saying, I'm not going to go on the Jerry Springer show, because that's that's what it would ultimately be. And you know what? We should get to this, too. Yeah, ratings and profit are definitely big motives for both Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. But what they're doing, besides raising their own profiles, is raising the profile of RFK Jr., and I really think that's their mission.
Yeah.
And so I think, Bob, it bears us repeating the warning that we've given before and we should keep giving, that Democratic voters, progressive voters, need to be keenly aware of what we're up against here, because in addition to the usual gerrymandering and voter suppression and all the other ways Republicans have learned to cheat, we now have these so-called third-party candidates, and we have, if I may mention it, the No Labels Party coming up. If they launch a candidate like Manchin or Sinema for president, all these things do, as you pointed out, they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Their purpose, and specifically the purpose of the No Labels Party, is to siphon off votes from Biden so Trump will win.
Yeah.
I have some good news about that, if I may share.
Sure.
Democrats and anti-Trump Republicans have joined together to fight the No Labels Party.
Good.
Some of the best minds from the Republican Party, I know. Mm-hmm. Stop laughing.
Yeah.
Some of the best minds from the Democratic Party are meeting and discussing a common goal, something they totally have in common. Neither of them ever wants Donald Trump to be president of the United States ever again. And so I'm heartened to know that Democratic and Republican leaders are working together to try to quash the threat posed by the No Labels Party and by RFK Jr. and anybody else who's running. These candidacies do one thing and one thing only, and that's siphon votes off of Biden so Trump can win. And the important message for voters here is not only do we have to overcome the usual hurdles in the upcoming election, we have to jump even higher this time.
Yeah, yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think this is about either intentionally or unintentionally helping Donald Trump become president again.
Yeah.
Whether it's No Labels or whether it's RFK Jr. or whether it's Marianne Williamson or any of the contrarian weirdos who support these people.
Totally.
The intention, irrespective of what that is, will result in a certain thing if they're successful, and that is Donald Trump becomes president again. So you have to seriously take a look at the motivations of these people.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say we don't want that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Do not want.
Exactly. Oh, you know what? Here's something I do not want.
Uh-huh.
When I mention RFK Jr. on Twitter, what I do not want is a bunch of people in the replies going, oh, he's got a funny sounding voice. Now, he's got a disorder, and I think it's unfair to tease him for his voice. He's got something called spasmodic dysphonia. And that's what makes his voice sound a little bit like Katharine Hepburn, that kind of warbly voice.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And so it's not, he's not putting anything on. It's not a thing. It's not a place we should go. There are enough wacky things that he says that I think that will suffice as far as attacking RFK Jr.
I want to suppress any attempt to give him oxygen. That's what this debate challenge is all about, is giving his campaign oxygen. He's trying other ways, and others are trying to help him find ways to get oxygen and get publicity, get exposure. And I want to suppress that as much as possible for the potential damage he can do.
Oh, yeah. And he's using the fact that there's so much There's so much drive toward reach and engagement and downloads when it comes to these podcasts and the way social media handles things. He's just riding that wave is what he's doing. That's what RFK Jr. This is what No Labels is doing. Marianne Williamson is doing that. They're playing into this whole new arena where everything is driven by social media branding, etc. And that's certainly what Joe Rogan is doing, for sure. So don't miss the fact that this is just a show that they're putting on. That's at the center of all of this. Okay.
Carnival.
Lots to, more to talk about here. On the big shadow docket today. Make sure to go to patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Sign up for $5 a month. Zuckerberg and Twitter news. Bernie Kerik news. So much more to talk about. Sign up for the shadow docket. We'll see you over there, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.